All right, City Council will come back to order. Can I borrow this? Which ones have we done? Now I need the one that says what we've
done. No, I already did that too.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. It's on mine.
Okay. Which one is the greens are done?
Yeah.
All right. Carla, can you please read the title for resolution item number 756? And we are all on a tight timeline, so we will move expeditiously.
756, adopt the revised capital budget and finance plan for the Portland Streetcar Loop project.
Yeah, can we read all the relating ones as well?
757, amend the intergovernmental agreement with TriMet for support services related to construction of the Portland Streetcar Loop project. 758, amend the intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County for services related to county bridges and the Portland Streetcar Loop project. 759, amend contract with Portland Streetcar Inc. to provide additional project management and other professional services for the Portland Streetcar Loop project. 760, amend contract with Portland Streetcar Inc. to provide additional professional services for design and civil engineering during the construction phase of the Portland Streetcar Loop project. And 761, amend contract with Portland Streetcar Inc. for Portland Streetcar operations assistance.
Ms. Deedy.
Okay. I'm going to start out today. I'd like to ask Carter I'm Vicki Deedy with this. Thank you. Vicki Deedy with the Bureau of Transportation and the city's project manager for Portland Streetcar. I've asked Carter McNichol to come to council today with me, and he's going to give us a kind of a project update. We're getting awfully close to finishing this, and I think it's time that we, you know, give an update to council to let you know where we are.
Mr. McNichol.
Okay. Carter McNichol. I'm with Shields Obelis Johnson. We're the project manager with Portland Streetcar, Inc. On the streetcar project. I want to give you a quick update and then talk about a couple of the items for you. You may recall that the project commenced in August of 2009, and we were in front of you in October of 2009 approving the first capital finance plan and several of the contracts moving forward. We've made tremendous progress, as you've seen, probably driving around, and we're approximately 80% complete at this point. By the end of August, all the track work, which is the most disruptive work we do in the street, will be complete in the public right-of-way. We still have some track on the OMSI bridge, but the really disruptive traffic work will be complete. The maintenance facility is complete with the exception of some minor equipment that needs to be included, installed later. The major risk we talked about, because the risks were a big deal two years ago, related to the Broadway Bridge, the underground utilities, which is always risky work, and the OMSI Viaduct work over the Union Pacific Railroad. I'm happy to report that particularly the Broadway Bridge, I think, was the one that everybody was wringing their hands about, and that's really gone very, very well. We've had some changes, mostly directed by Multnomah County, who's the owner of the bridge. But I wouldn't say it was problem-free, but the problems were much less than we expected we might even encounter, and that part of the project went very well. The underground utility work is all complete at this point and has been since earlier this spring. It also went well. It's sort of normal, unexpected issues that you encounter underground, but not huge amounts of costs. I will say the one outstanding issue is there is a potential for a claim from one of the sewer subcontractors. And we're working with BES and with the city attorney and PBOT and the contractor to minimize and resolve that claim, yeah, should it come about. We also were in the midst and back in that time of working with the Union Pacific Railroad to get permits to build a overcrossing. If you've worked with them, you know that can be a long and difficult process, but we got through that. And we've completed the bridge, and UP is happy and it has worked out very well.
What was it, if I could, what's the nature of the claim on the sewer system, and how big would it be?
The claim has to do with four different locations on the project with, unexpected underground conditions. It's not very clear, frankly. Right now, the subcontractor hasn't provided us very good information about it. The total amount of the claim is about $850,000. The vast bulk of that relates to work that was betterments that was done by the project for BES. So the risk to the streetcar budget is about $150,000, we think, in worst case, and the balance of that would be BES. We did a number of improvements, you know, while we were working in the streets. We did a number of what we call betterments for both the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services. I wanted to report also on the DBE front. This is because this is a federal project and a TriMet project, we report the subcontractor participation as disadvantaged business enterprise rather than the city's MWESB. But we are at about 15.9% as we stand through June, and the contractor has assured me that he will get to the 16%, which was his stated goal in the project going forward. And keep in mind, that's on about $100 million of work, so it's quite a bit of work, 16%.
Excuse me, have you had any discussions with Christine Mudie and Procurement Services about ways to help them increase that?
We have regular meetings between our contractor and Christine Mudie and her staff, so they're, as well as with TriMet's DBE staff.
Thank you.
The key remaining issues are, and what the work you'll continue to see, is the installation of the overhead wires and systems components, which is very important work, but it doesn't have the sort of broad traffic kind of impacts. We still have some more platforms to build in, again, isolated areas. All of this work is currently proceeding on schedule and within the budget. One issue that is outstanding is that we are doing some pedestrian improvements at the Morrison and Hawthorne bridgeheads, as well as building some stormwater drainage swales on the bridgehead property controlled by Multnomah County. And we've been working with them for months on resolution of some easements, and those are not done as of today. We are hoping they will be done shortly, but they are probably the biggest risk to us in terms of timely completion of the project. I'm very hopeful that we'll get through that. So that's where we stand. I don't know if there's other questions about the resolution in particular, or if you want to take questions all at the end, or how you want to do this.
Do you have more if it's part of your presentation?
For the resolution, I know only just the only thing I'd like to add about the resolution is the fact that the budgeted amount has not changed $1 since we were here in October of 2009.
And why don't you speak to the other
good thing to point out.
Yes.
Good thing to point out.
We're proud of that.
If you could speak to the other council-related council items.
Yes.
Okay. Make sure you cover the United Streetcar car delivery issue as well.
I will.
Okay. I'll talk about the TriMet IGA item, which is the first ordinance. This is a federally funded project. TriMet actually receives the grant from the federal government, and then the city is a subgrantee. So we've had an intergovernmental agreement with TriMet where they work with us on the administration of the grant and other items. There's really three key components to the increase in the IGA amount, which the total increase is $645,000. The first $230,000 really relate to ongoing grant administration, principally in the form of increased scrutiny from the FTA. We were told by the FTA early in the project that this project, because it was what's called a small start, is $75 million, which is a lot of money to all of us, but to the FTA is not much, that it would sort of have less scrutiny, less oversight, and they've ended up providing oversight at the same level that they would for a billion-dollar subway project. So that's created a lot of time pressure for all of us, both at TriMet as well as the city staff and the consulting staff. Additionally, TriMet has been deeply involved and importantly involved in the discussions with Oregon Ironworks related to the vehicles. And their vehicle staff are very experienced, obviously, at this. So in addition to the consultants that we have on board representing the city, we've had TriMet staff deeply involved in those negotiations, in the design review, in the resolution of the issues related to the vehicle. Additionally, there's an increase. Part of the $600,000 is an increase of $138,000 for bus, what we call bus bridges. When we interrupt service on either streetcar or MAX line, we contract with TriMet to provide buses to essentially mimic that service so that people can continue to move on the system. And then finally, there's $267,000 in there for what our startup costs. When we do a startup of a system, and TriMet, as you may know, provides the operators and the mechanics for the system, in order for them to increase the number of operators they provide us, they promote bus drivers to be rail operators. They have to recruit new and train new bus operators. They have to train the new rail operators. They have to hire new mechanics. There's a cost associated with that. And this is actually the 267 represents half of TriMet's costs for providing that startup assistance. Typically, these startup costs have been covered as operating expenses. And because this is a federal project, these startup costs are eligible to capitalize. So we're taking advantage of that opportunity to get them out of the operating budget and put them in the capital project. So that's the TriMet. The county change, this is the second amendment to the county IGA. It's pretty self-explanatory. Essentially, the county provides, at their request, we agreed to compensate them for their costs associated with inspection of the work on the Broadway Bridge. And they've spent more money than was in the IGA, and they've asked us to increase the amount. And that's what we've agreed to do, or we're proposing to you to agree to do at
$141,000.
Okay. $759,000.
All right. Let me, I'm going to talk about the amendment to the contract for design services and for operations assistance first. Then we'll come to the project management, because that's where we can get into some of the issues with the car. For the design services amendment, this is an agreement with Portland Streetcar Inc., and we're seeking an increase of about $270,000 for a new contract total of $10.8 million. This has been our primary design contractor. It's URS Corporation and all of their subcontractors. The primary reason for the increase in this on the for the funds is because of additional services that the city required for such things as additional survey, traffic channelization, and a lot of changes on the signalization side. The item that is, it's an amendment with the Portland Streetcar Inc. contract for operations assistance, that we will bring an entirely new agreement that is being developed, and we will bring back to you for adding the Loop Project service to the streetcar system. This particular item is just to recognize the total cost for a replacement of an inventory clerk that Portland Streetcar Inc. through SOJ has hired. It's a higher level person, and they're really good. And so we're adding $36,000 for salaries and benefits and all the rest to the operations assistant agreement. And our budget, the streetcar.
Is that the full salary for the
inventory? No, that's just the increase. Both. It's
what's the full salary for an inventory?
Oh, I don't have the number in front of me right now, Dan. I'm sorry, but I can get it for you. But it includes the wages, the benefits, and vacations, all of, and plus just expenses related to the position.
Why have we hired somebody who's that much more expensive? Why not?
They have brought very, very good skills that we need in the operations and maintenance facility, particularly around being able to deal with Maximo, which we are just bringing into this facility to help us manage our inventory much more efficiently and hopefully less costly.
Before we, I think this is not an emergency ordinance, right?
It is.
It
yes.
isn't? Oh. I would really like to know what's the industry standard, what was the person getting before, what was the previous one getting? And also, I'm interested in discussing the previous issue about minorities and women. How many of the final applicants were minorities and women?
I will be happy to do that.
Thank you.
And the job description.
Yes. It was a very extensive interview process, and I'll pull up all those records. Then the last amendment we have is to the Portland Streetcar Inc. agreement for project management services. And we are seeking an increase of about $557,000 for a new contract total of $4.7 million. Now, do recognize that all these contracts have gone back to the beginning of the federalized process. So we're talking about design development, preliminary engineering, final engineering, and then services during construction. About half of the amount that is being requested are for additional services that, as Carter mentioned, required by the Federal Transit Administration. We have been under greater scrutiny than we were led to believe that we would be. There's also coordination with TriMet on the Portland-Milwaukee light rail projects.
Well, if I could pause, the greater scrutiny, among other things, translates into the requirement for more and more frequent paperwork.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Dealing with on-site inspections, I mean,
It just snowballs, right, is what it does.
Paperwork, inspections, tours.
Right.
I have to go to a meeting tomorrow in Seattle to meet with the FTA that I wouldn't have expected to.
And this first half I'm talking about, besides the FTA, we've got the coordination with TriMet with the Portland-Milwaukee light rail project down in the OMSI area. As you recall, that when TriMet builds the new bridge across the river, we will use that bridge to complete our loop, which is a separate project called Close the Loop. And we just need to make sure that what they're building that we can get ourselves onto and to lay out the plan for doing so. And then there has been the analysis of negotiations required for the propulsion system substitution in the loop vehicles being manufactured by Oregon Ironworks. I'll come back to that, but the other half of this $557,000 is related to a time extension and additional services needed for the final certification of the vehicles, for a closeout of the construction project, and for the startup of revenue service. So, coming back to the cars very quickly, as you recall, the City of Portland has two contracts with Oregon Ironworks. One of them is for this streetcar prototype that was funded by the federal government from the FTA. It was a markup in the last reauthorization of the transportation bill, and it was at the behest of Peter DeFazio. And the primary purpose of it was for the domestic production of a streetcar vehicle, things that hadn't happened before. And then we have a second contract with Oregon Ironworks, funded by a $20 million grant from the state, backed by lottery-backed funds. Requirements on that were that the firm be an Oregon-owned and Oregon-based. So we're looking at Oregon jobs is really the big focus here. And feel free to jump in if I've got some of the facts not straight. It gets confusing. Prototype project, Oregon Ironworks had a partnership with Škoda, which is a Czech firm, who manufactured our other streetcars, not their propulsion system, but they manufactured them. So the Škoda propulsion system went into the prototype. That car runs. That's not the problem. The problem is that there are requirements in our technical specifications for the proper documentation and test procedures so that our vehicle engineering services consultant will certify that the cars are suitable for revenue service. Škoda is either unwilling or unable to meet or didn't see the need to meet all of those requirements. Oregon Ironworks came to the city and asked us into Portland Streetcar Inc. and asked us if we would accept a substitution of the propulsion system from Rockwell International. And at the same time, both contracts are in effect at this point in time. So this decision will have an impact on what goes into the prototype, what goes into the production vehicles. And after many meetings, and I think, Sam, you were involved with several of them, with Rockwell International, with Oregon Ironworks, with Portland Streetcar Inc., with our consultants, we decided the best thing to do was to take Rockwell, who, again, this was going to be a system that they were going to design new, and put it and use the prototype as the opportunity for them to learn about that business, because it is indeed a prototype. And you know, if they're successful, and we see no reason why they won't be, we will then have domestic content in the prototype of 90%, which is pretty good. We've gone went from about 65 to 90. On the other side of the ledger, on the production vehicles, these vehicles are just awfully important to us to get service started on the Loop project. And so we decided that we wanted to see the ELIN propulsion system put into those cars. And this was, what, about a 6-7 month process that we went through to do all of this?
At least, yes.
So as part of that ELIN propulsion system going into the cars, there were some non-recurring engineering costs that had to be paid for. And I kind of, it's like putting a, you know, a Chevy engine into a Yugo. I mean, how are you going to make them all fit without some additional engineering? So we amended our contract with Oregon Ironworks, and we reduced the number of cars we were buying from them from 6 to 5, and then we were going to pay the non-recurring engineering costs. We also had Oregon Ironworks grant us the option of buying that sixth car that had been a part of the original order and allowing us to receive credits on those non-recurring engineering costs as they sold additional cars with the ELIN system in it. For example, Oregon Ironworks has an order with Tucson for 7 cars. There's a $145,000 credit for each one of those cars. So those 7 cars that Tucson's going to buy, the city will receive a credit of slightly over $1 million, which will then reduce that price of the option car.
Partly why the mayor goes around the nation selling streetcars.
Yes, he does. And a few more would be good. So
I'm working. I need to do a program note. We're going to lose Commissioner Frisch.
Okay.
Commissioner Fish. So, which means we'll lose the ability to do emergencies. And I'm happy to now.
I have to leave at 1 also.
Right. So I think we have a choice of either setting further consideration of this over to tomorrow, because we have a session tomorrow, along with our other items. We can hear the items in the next 15 minutes that don't require emergencies. What's your preference? And then you're gone tomorrow, right? Are you here tomorrow?
No, I'm here tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I'm ready to move. Emergencies.
Those were all my comments on the okay. on the items.
Are we okay to move?
Could you just summarize? That was a very detailed and helpful, and from somebody who's been involved in this for a long time. Mayor, could you just give me a couple of sentences summarizing what Vicki just said as far as the 5 versus 6? And
yes, the United Ironworks has, I think, from the vantage point of developing a streetcar manufacturing industry in the United States, going with the higher domestic content is smart on a number of different levels. We're more likely to sell more cars across the country if cities across the country can point to the car and say, we have pieces of us in this car. However, doing that requires the kinds of changes in the approach that's reported in the Oregonian today and that Vicki has sort of outlined as well. In order to make this as win-win as possible, the more that we sell, the more that our team sells streetcars around the country, the cheaper that sixth car gets. So we are, and there is a delay in the delivery of the vehicles, not in our piece of it, but the delivery of the vehicles as well, which will delay the full opening and fare service for the Loop. All in all, you know, it's not what we'd hoped for, but considering we're starting a brand new industry, it's also not unexpected, and I think what we put out there manages the risks and has incentives for all of us to actually, you know, at least deliver on this schedule, if not beat it.
Thank you. That's very helpful. So we should hear testimony on these at least, but then I'm comfortable moving forward because 761 is not an emergency.
Correct. So that's the issue of the additional fees.
Right. Absolutely.
Does anyone wish to testify on any of these 6?
No one signed up.
All right. So Carla, would you begin calling the votes?
On 756, Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 757.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 758.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 759.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 760.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Let's.
62.
Okay. 62. Please read the title, call the vote.
762. Adopt the Innovation Quadrant District Transportation System Development Charge Overlay Project Report. Establish a fee schedule and amend code effective November 1, 2011. Saltzman.
I recuse myself from this vote because I have a potential economic interest.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish? Adams?
Aye. 762 is approved. Can you please read the titles for 763 and 64? I think they'll be a lot quicker than you think because they're sort of temporary, keep things going while we figure out the final solution. And as you can see, we don't have a lot of opposition.
763, allow the
Maybe
downtown business district fee calculation for the 2011-2012 license year to waive increasing the consumer price index adjustment required under code section 6.06.200 and 6.06210. 764, authorize agreement for downtown business district management services with Clean and Safe, Inc.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Thomas Lanham. I'm the Revenue Bureau Director. On April 20th, City Council passed a resolution directing my bureau, the Revenue Bureau, to renew the downtown business district for an additional 10 years, to renew a service contract with Clean and Safe for 5 years, and to begin a comprehensive outreach process regarding the possible expansion of the district boundaries and a review of the condominium funding formula. The two ordinances before you today will take care of the first two pieces of that. So they will renew the contract with Clean and Safe for 5 years and maintain current service levels for security, cleaning, cleaning, marketing, and street ambassador programs. They will freeze the code-required consumer price index for 1 year as requested by the mayor and the Clean and Safe Board of Directors and grant the Revenue Bureau an additional 2 months to complete the comprehensive outreach process that your offices have been briefed on that I can speak to more if you want to, or I can stop here.
Questions from council? Anyone wish to testify on 63, 64? Carla, can you please call the vote on both?
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Thomas Lanham and Shane Atmer of Clean and Safe. It's a wonderful program, and I appreciate your willingness to look into the issue of the freeze of CPI affecting wages. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 64.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. All right, first hearing, just explanation of 765. Can you please read the title?
Amend the transit lodging tax law to clarify the time period for tax corrections to be made, tax enforcement to occur, and to improve the administrative appeal process.
Ms. Director Lanham.
Good afternoon. I'm Thomas Lanham, the Revenue Bureau Director. The ordinance before you today amends the portions of the Portland City Code Section 604 concerning the transient lodgings tax law. A transient lodgings tax of 6% has been levied against Portland hotel and motel room occupants since 1972. 5% of this tax is passed to the city's general fund, and 1% is dedicated to the travel and tourism fund. In summary, the code changes before you today will increase the city's ability to enforce its code against persons who willfully or fraudulently fail to comply with the law by lifting a self-imposed 3-year statute of limitations. They will also bring the code into alignment with the business license tax law and Oregon state laws concerning filing requirements. Finally, they change the administrative appeal process for appeals wherein the tax liability under appeal is substantial and make certain elements and obligations of the appeal process more express. So I'll stop there and ask for questions.
Discussion from council. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Moves to a second reading next week. We're in recess till tomorrow at 2 p.m. Is that right?
Yeah. Something like that.
In the afternoon.